This is Liberation Radio.
Capitalism needs poverty.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Whatever we could do, we're gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth.
Each week, we bring you interviews, commentary, analysis, political developments, and struggles affecting workers throughout the country as a way to build the movement for socialism in the United States.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The only thing that will ever defeat racism will be the defeat of its parents, capitalism and imperialism.
Without smashing mass incarceration, working people of all nationalities cannot have justice.
Liberation Radio is brought to you by the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Welcome to Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. On this episode, we discuss Greece, the shift left, the class struggle, and communist tactics. But first, we got to speak with Jane Cutter, a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in Seattle. She gives us an analysis on the collapse of the Yemen government in January and the role of U.S. imperialism in that country. So, Jane, one of the key issues that makes this hard to grasp is the lack of understanding of the players. Could you characterize the former Western-backed government in the wake of the departure of President Hadi, as well as the Houthis and the Southern Secession movement?
Sure. So the government that is still sort of the government, although President Hadi resigned a few days ago, as well as did his cabinet, are basically the successors to the government of President Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was president for more than 30 years of Yemen. And that is a government that has very much collaborated with imperialism. They've permitted the drone bombing of the territory. They've collaborated with U.S. intelligence and military forces to allegedly in the war against terror. And of course, in response, they've received some aid. Of course, Yemen is a very poor country, the poorest country in the region, despite its very rich culture and a great potential for many things. People there live in great poverty. The Houthis are a grouping in the north. And so they're both a religious grouping and a tribal grouping. Religiously, they are Zaydi Muslims, which is a branch, kind of a Shia Muslim, but you only find this particular sect in Yemen. It's unique to Yemen. And prior to the 1962 revolution, a Republican revolution in the north, the country was ruled by a Zaydi imamate. So the Houthis are Zaydis. They would like to have more autonomy for their region and more say-so in changes in the country. They've sort of stepped into the role of being taking a stance against corruption and also articulating anti-imperialist sentiments, which are very prevalent in Yemen. So, for instance, days after the collapse of the government, people were rallying last Friday in Sana'a in support of the Houthis, chanting death to America, death to Israel, or down with America, down with the U.S., down with Israel. So the Houthis, and as I said, they're also a tribal grouping. And historically, the power in Yemen has really been more tribal-based than central government-based. So the central government of Ali Abdullah Saleh really functioned because he was able to play the different tribes off each other and kind of keep the tribal leaderships satisfied so that they would then kind of run their areas and keep everything kind of humming together as a unified country. So it's not really, it's a different model, if you will, than what you might imagine if your only experience has been living in the United States. The Southern Secessionist Movement. So the South Yemen has a different history from North Yemen. It was colonized by Britain, and Aden is a very important deep water port. So it was colonized by Britain, and there was a liberation struggle, and the colonists were basically kicked out. Britain was kicked out, and they left pretty much with their tails between their legs. And South Yemen became the People's Democratic Republic of Yemen. It was a socialist state for a number of years until in the late 80s, the two Yemens began discussions over reunifying. And in 1990, I believe, they did reunite. However, that was a kind of a rocky process. And in 94, there was a civil war between the North and South. The South, the North came out victorious in this process. And so the more capitalist, neoliberal side came out on top. And since then, in the South, there's been some kind of smoldering resentment over this, which has now reemerged in the form of this Southern secessionist movement that is involves people from the former Socialist Party of South Yemen and also other people as well, including Islamists who are not necessarily in favor, who may be in favor of a secular society, a secular government. And other groupings as well. The other player in the situation is the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, as they're known. And they're mostly in the central part of the country, although the New York Times yesterday made the bald assertion that they were collaborating openly with the Southern Secession Movement. I did a little bit more research on that. I sincerely doubt that the New York Times has anybody on the ground in that part of the country to witness that with their own eyes, and they don't make any reference to the source as to where they got that information. So I would take it very much with a grain of salt. As I said, I did a little bit more research into the question, and it appears that some southern tribes are collaborating somewhat with AQAP for their own purposes. And one thing that's going on right now in the South is because of the Houthis taking control of the capital, they're concerned about what this is going to mean for their struggle. And so they're trying to seize territory in the South to be able to hold it against the Houthis. And what exactly is going on is unclear. One thing that is clear is the United States, under the guise of fighting AQAP, has launched the drone attacks, drone bombings in Yemen. And these are wildly unpopular. People, even if they're not crazy big fans of AQAP, they don't like the idea of dropping drones on civilians. There have been some terrible incidents where wedding parties or caravans of extended families traveling together have been attacked by drones, and this is extremely hated by the Yemeni people. So it actually may drive some sympathy for AQAP, although a lot of people would probably not agree with them ideologically.
Some say the Houthis are just an Iranian proxy. How do you evaluate that claim?
Well, that's a gross oversimplification. It's clear that they are having some support from Iran, but to say that they're just an Iranian proxy really takes away their agency, who they are as Yemenis, with their own unique culture and traditions. So I think that's, and they've been engaged in their struggle for a long time, and I think Iran has only really become more actively involved in supporting them more recently. So to make it seem as if they're just some sort of puppets being pulled by strings. I think they have their own motivations and their own justifications for what they're choosing to do. And it's not just simply driven by Iran.
And finally, with the recent events, what do you think, how does this impact the goals of U.S. imperialism and its clients?
Well, I think their goals remain the same, which is to dominate the region, to try to, expand the empire and all those sort of things. Those have really not changed. A few days after the resignation of the government, there was some information that the U.S. was temporarily suspending counterterrorism efforts in Yemen. However, today in the New York Times, it's reported that three alleged members of AQAP, including a teenager, who, by the way, had lost two of his close family members in previous drone bombings, were killed in a drone bombing. And the picture in the New York Times is quite horrific of a small passenger vehicle just gutted by the bomb. So clearly, it's business as usual with the drone bombing in Yemen for U.S. imperialism. Clearly, it's a very strategic location in the world, there between Asia and Africa. It's a site where a lot of where Al-Qaeda has kind of a lot of roots. Osama bin Laden is from a part of Saudi Arabia that's very close to Yemen, and one of his wives was actually Yemeni. So there are definitely ties of Al-Qaeda to parts of Yemen. So I think the U.S. Definitely has an interest in staying involved there and using it as a kind of a launching ground for other goals it has in the broader region, such as East Africa and Asia, for that matter, as well as the rest of the Middle East.
Jane is a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in Seattle, and you can read more of her analysis on liberationnews.org. We'll be back after a quick break. Tuned in to Liberation Radio. You can check out our website, liberationradio.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/liberationradioshow, and on Twitter at the handle at Liberation Radio. Next, we got a chance to speak with Walter Smolarek, a regular contributor to Liberation News. He discusses the electoral victory in Greece by the coalition of the radical left, also known as Syriza, and what it means for the left and working people in Greece and in Europe. All right, Walter, first and foremost, can you talk about the significance of the victory by Syriza?
Well, the victory is a highly, highly significant event that has people all over the world talking about it. You know, not just people on the left, but also in the halls of power. It's a very major development. So Greece is, you could say, the weak link in the advance. Capitalist countries, sort of the imperialist core. Since 2009, it's been engulfed in a very serious economic crisis. both as a result of the overall world crisis of capitalism that emerged in 2007 and 2008, and also because of a debt crisis that's more particular to Europe and especially the periphery of the Eurozone, which we would include in that, you know, Greece, but also Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland. And as a result of that debt crisis, they were placed into what's sometimes called the bailout program, or, you know, more accurately, the memorandum, where a troika of lenders, which includes the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, and the European Union, agreed to provide hundreds of billions of euros. This was two different agreements, but cumulatively hundreds of billions of euros in bailout money, which, you know, as we know from our experience with bailouts in the United States, don't actually go to the people, which go right back into the pockets of the big bankers. And in return for this emergency lending from the Troika, Greece was required to carry out a series of just absolutely devastating austerity measures, which were aimed at rolling back the social gains won by poor and working people in Greece over decades and decades and decades of struggle. So that includes, you know, cutting pensions, slashing wages, privatizing publicly owned companies, deregulating professions, and just absolutely devastating the social situation in Greece. There's massive unemployment. The majority of young people are unemployed. Poverty has skyrocketed. Homelessness has skyrocketed. Most people, or at least a significant number of people, can't afford to heat their homes. So the election of Syriza is sort of a rejection of those policies and hope for something new, even if that's not particularly well-defined at this point.
So now Syriza is often referred to as the radical left. How do you assess that statement?
Well, if we are talking about the radical left in terms of political forces that aim to bring about the seizure of power by the oppressed, we would have to, myself and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, we would have to reject that label for Syriza. So Syriza is a multi-tenancy organization, and certainly there are elements of Syriza, especially organized around this one internal tenancy called the Left Platform, that you know, are certainly on the radical left and believe in the socialist transformation of society. But what we've seen from the leadership of Syriza, and especially in the past few weeks as the election campaign really heated up, was a rapid move to the right. And backtracking on even some of the promises that allowed them to make their initial electoral breakthrough in 2012, when they rose from relative obscurity to becoming the main opposition party in parliament. So Syriza called for a European debt conference and a European New Deal, which would basically involve the leaders of the imperialist states of the Eurozone getting together, deciding that Greece doesn't have to pay off a portion of its debt, and then pumping massive amounts of money into public program, you know, like infrastructure programs and things to basically that would stimulate demand and increase employment. So that's an extremely unlikely scenario. And in terms of the domestic policies, the policies that don't have to directly do with the with Greece's dealings with the Troika, Syriza frames those in traditional social democratic terms, meaning that what's good for workers can also be good for bosses, right? You know, if the workers have more money in their pocket, then they're going to spend more and buy more from the capitalists, who can in turn pay their workers more. And it's, you know, just like a happy circle, the way they present it. But we know that's not true. We know that any wealth that's created by the working class must be stolen from the capitalist class, at least a portion of it must be stolen, and what's good for one is bad for the other. So Syriza doesn't promote that type of class struggle perspective that we think is a basic requirement for any force that wants to be considered part of the radical left.
And what would you say are the biggest challenges facing Syriza?
Well, Syriza is going to face a number of very serious challenges in government. They've already managed to form a majority government by signing an agreement with this right-wing populist party called Independent Greeks, which was formed as like a populist split from New Democracy, which is the formerly ruling Conservative Party that just got voted out of office. So Independent Greeks is a racist anti-immigrant party who bases their support in large part on Greek nationalism, more or less, and anti-German sentiments. But they did oppose the bailouts and the memorandum and the austerity. And so on that basis, Syriza has been able to form a government with a majority in parliament. I believe it's 162 out of 300 seats. But now Syriza is going to need to nominate a replacement for the president. So the president of Greece is a largely ceremonial position, but the constitution requires that a 3/5 majority of parliament vote in favor of a candidate to be the president. And it was actually that mechanism that allowed Syriza to bring down the previous New Democracy government and force these early elections, which they won. So by March, they'll need to find a presidential candidate that is acceptable to 3/5 of parliamentarians in the parliament, which will require them to go beyond their existing governing coalition with Independent Greeks to, at the very least, a centrist party called the sort of centrist center-left party called the River, and then that would actually still leave them a couple of votes short, so either the Tamias Party of Greece or TASOC, which is this traditional social democratic party, would have to vote in favor of their candidates. So that's going to be a very difficult challenge. But the big challenge is to negotiate some sort of arrangement with the Troika to lighten Greece's debt load, to make it sustainable and to free up some fiscal space for the Syriza government to implement policies to address what they rightfully call a humanitarian crisis facing the Greek working class. So that will need to be done most likely before the summer, which is when a very large amount of Greek debt matures, and they'll have to pay it. It totals a little bit over 11 billion euros. So the clock is ticking very quickly for the Syriza government.
And what is the analysis of the role played by the Communist Party of Greece, also known as the KKE?
Well, the KKE is a party with a very long history of struggle in Greece. They were the main force in the anti-Nazi resistance when Greece was occupied during World War II. There was a civil war immediately following World War II where the Greek Communist Party made a serious bid for power. And then in the decades following, through conditions of legality, of illegality, especially during the 1967 to 1974 military dictatorship in Greece. But what we see now is highly unfortunate in that the Communist Party of Greece is following essentially a policy and a strategy of abstention from the current developments. So the KKE's election campaign and their orientation towards the mass movement is more and more oriented towards polemicizing against Syriza as opposed to engaging in a united front of sorts that would open up the KKE, which advocates the revolutionary transformation of society, the socialization of all major industries, that would allow the KKE to reach a broader audience of the Greek working class and to win over the masses of Greek workers to a revolutionary position. So it remains to be seen whether or not the KKE's parliamentary delegation will lend critical support to Syriza at certain points. But the refusal to either participate in a coalition government or to provide votes of confidence, basically, for a Syriza minority government is, in the view of the Party for Socialism and Liberation and my own, a very unfortunate development that makes it less likely for a revolutionary pole of attraction to emerge in the mass movement in Greece, and also strengthens the forces of the right wing. If the KKE agreed to participate or at least give critical support to a Syriza government, Independent Greeks would not be in a position that they are in today, which is a very powerful one. You know, the leader of that party received the defense ministry. So, you know, this right-wing racist is in charge, at least nominally, of the military of Greece now. So it remains to be seen how that strategy will evolve with the existing conditions and the developing conditions. But it has to be said that it's a highly unfortunate strategy that the KKE is following.
And what should the radical left around the world be doing to support Greek revolutionaries?
Well, when the ruling classes of Europe look at the situation in Greece, they're going to make a calculation. And that involves not just the immediate situation in Greece, but all the other pressures and situations around the world, and especially those in the periphery of the Eurozone, the Spain, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, and Greece, but also in countries all around the world. And if they see that working people are standing with the Greek working class and oppressed people, if they're demanding that the Troika and the other forces of international capitalism back off and allow the Greek people to regain the social rights that have been taken away from them over years of austerity, that's going to make a real difference in the situation. And so I think it's important that we escalate the level of struggle, both directly in solidarity with Greece and also around other issues facing working and oppressed people, to try to change the situation in a way that's favorable to the Greek people.
For more on our analysis of the Syriza win in Greece, you can go to liberationnews.org. That's all for Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. Please remember, this program is available free for broadcast by community and public radio stations. You can encourage your local radio station to air Liberation Radio. They can visit liberationradio.org for details. And of course, tune in next week for more from the Struggle for Justice.
You have been listening to Liberation Radio, a weekly program from the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You can find us online at liberationradio.org to listen to past shows and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Some of what you heard during this program are Creative Commons licensed compositions. Our theme music and some music segments were performed by Six Fingers and used with permission of the artist. Liberation Radio is produced by the Party for Socialism and Liberation to help build the struggle for socialism in the United States. The PSL is a party of activists and organizers. We are in the streets at the demonstrations and picket lines, opposing cutbacks and attacks on workers, standing up to police brutality, fighting for immigrant rights, and struggling against racism, sexism, homophobia, and all forms of bigotry. We stand in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world resisting imperialism. We believe the crimes of capitalism call for a new kind of society, and we are committed to fighting for it. To find a PSL branch near you, see our upcoming events and learn more about how you can get involved. PSLweb.org. Again, that's PSLweb.org. Also, the PSL's Liberation newspaper online at liberationnews.org, where you can read our news articles and analysis or purchase a subscription to the print edition. Thank you for listening.